Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the back. Test, test. Test, test. Welcome to the ManaPro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning. All at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Thursday, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. It's just a neat topic. Let me put it that way. Thursdays, and at least the second and fourth Thursdays of every month, have kind of become one of my favorites. I mean, I love all our shows, but when Richard comes on and talks about sustainable living and all the unique and interesting topics he shares with us on the show, it's really amazing. I mean, some awesome topics like caring for and cooking with cast iron, all about predators, all about geothermal heating, all about using biochar in the garden, solar power, wind power. And today's topic is equally as interesting, whether you live in a, say, tornado alley, maybe you live in an area that gets a lot of ice storms, maybe hurricanes. It's just going to be a really interesting topic today. I'm really anxious. Make sure you get your Chicken Whisperer spiral notebook out we talk about with the big CW on it. Make sure you take a lot of notes. But today's topic is going to be planting storm-resistant trees, basically to survive windstorms, tornadoes, ice storms, and disrupted weather patterns. So how cool is that? And different trees that have are evergreen or not evergreen or have a tap root versus a root that spreads out a lot in the ground and to take hold. And, you know, if you live in an ice area, your evergreens may not be. It's just all these kind of great information that make you go, So we got a great, great show lined up for everybody today, and we appreciate you tuning in. Want to send a very special shout out to the folks in the Chicken chat room as it slowly but surely is starting to fill up. We've got Cheap Pete Poultry, we've got Critter Girl, East Dallas Dave, Flower Girl, several guests. Thank you for joining us. We've got Kevin in California, we've got KS Waterfowl, Matthew, New Dawn Farm Girl, Vanessa, and Walter, and a lot of others will be joining us as they do, as the next few minutes roll by, as they remember about the show, get their email reminder, or see our reminder on Facebook. So I want to send a shout out to all of you folks in the chat room. Thanks for listening live, and all the live listeners that can't participate in the chat because your workplace actually has it banned. Yep, many workplaces out there. We used to have a lot of listeners that would participate in the chat, but the next thing you know, their work banned them from the chat room. So we know you're listening out there, and we miss you in the chat room. I want to say hello to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show that we get emails from, as well as the homeschoolers. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope your week's going well. And last but not least, all of the feed and seed stores around the country that listen to the radio show and stream it live for their customers, just like one in the chat room now, Matthew Amott. He's up in Washington State, and he has his own store up there, feed and seed store, and he streams this show live for his customers. We just one of many, and we thank you very much for doing that. Of course, we encourage you to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com. There you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. So we encourage you to do that. My co-host Pat will not be joining us today. She is in the pharmacy both today and tomorrow, in the pharmacy saving lives and supporting, let's just say it, supporting Big Pharma. No, we know drugs save lives if they're used correctly and not overly prescribed, so the doc can go on a nice beach vacation from the drug company. But hey, we know drugs save lives. So, but Pat is there as a pharmacist working diligently, and we'll miss her on the radio show today. And so you just never know where the chat room may lead us, but it is fun, and if you're in there as a guest, we encourage you to join us. Basically, just scroll down a little bit on your computer screen. There we go. And hey, Critter Girl. And just scroll down a little bit on the computer screen. You'll see the chat room automatically opens up. You're already in the chat room as a guest, but we'd love to have you register so we can get acquainted and you can participate. So just click on the register now button. You can register with your Facebook account, I think your Twitter account, or you can just create one there at Blog Talk Radio and create your own account. So we appreciate you listening in. Or if you're just a spy that wants to come and spy on us and steal our ideas, that's fine too. We welcome you as well. All righty. So earlier in the week, we had a webinar with a Feed and Seed Tuesday night up in West Virginia. This morning, I got a few more phone calls from Feed and Seeds, actually in Florida, and they're interested in doing some webinars as well. And that's a great solution to all of you that are streaming the show live at your Feed and Seed store, is that, you know, I completely understand travel costs can get expensive. I have no control over that, but our events can get pricey based on travel cost. And so a webinar is a great alternative where you can just get a projector, get your computer, get online capability. We'll set up a webinar, and then we'll do basically it's the same Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop that we do when we're live, standing there. You just don't get the book signings and the autographs and the pictures and that one-on-one live, which is great, but we're still live. You still, you know, get the picture of me there talking. I can still answer questions live. It was basically the same curriculum that we use with our live show, and it is a little bit more affordable because you don't have to pay for all those travel costs. So looking at this morning, lining up a couple of more of those for some Feed and Seeds down in Florida. We love those. Get the word out, get to share our knowledge about raising backyard poultry and all the benefits of doing so. And they get the benefit of getting some customers educated before they buy the chicks for their Chick Days event. So it works really, really well for everybody. And if you're a Feed and Seed out there that are interested, just contact us at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. So we appreciate doing that. We'll have a little bit of chickens in the news later today in the show. We also have an awesome, awesome prize to give away today. We have got a brooder kit. Tis the season, right? People are getting baby chicks to add to their current flocks, or maybe their first time chicken getters. And we've got an awesome brooder kit. It's a great brooder. It includes the corral, the waterer, the feeder, the heat lamp bulb, basically everything you need to brood your new baby chicks. And that is, today being Thursday, is brought to you by Critter-Cages.com. Yep, Critter-Cages.com. And so one lucky listener on today's radio show, towards the end of the show, will win that awesome brooder kit valued at about $43. $43, I believe. Yeah, $42.99, $43 plus shipping to your front door anywhere in the lower 48 states. So how cool is that? We give a prize just about, well, every day we give a prize away, but we also give tons of prizes away every Friday for our Fun Friday shows. And starting on April the 2nd, why isn't it starting April 1st, April Fool's Day? Because it's a Sunday. No radio show. So Monday, April the 2nd, very proud, we are going to start, I think it's our third or fourth, Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. Yep, we give away a chicken coop just about every month, every other month here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, thanks to our sponsors. But really excited about this. It's the Chicken Coop for Classrooms contest. It will include everything the school needs to actually raise some backyard chickens. It'll include fertile hatching eggs. It'll include an incubator. It'll include a brooder. It'll include the coop and several educational books, of course, from yours truly, from Pat Foreman, from Christine Heinrich. So it's a great, great prize package. And you, our listeners and fans, will be able to nominate a local public or private school of your choice to win this awesome prize. How cool is that? Yes, public or private school only. No homeschoolers. As a homeschool parent myself, I can tell you that our goal here is to kind of train and educate the masses. And so with you have a kindergarten, the kindergarten department at a school may actually have 100, 150 students, plus the teachers, plus the parents, plus, you know, next year's 150 kids, plus the parents and all of that, versus maybe a mom and a dad and a child that homeschool. So that's the theory and our thoughts behind having private, our public schools actually enter this Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. So plus all the other contests that we have, every other month we're giving away a coop. You can enter that if you're a homeschool, and we appreciate that. I understand, because I experience it on a regular basis, that you may have a group of homeschoolers in the area that get together for a field trip here or there. I get that. But when it comes down to it, the coop will be in the back of somebody's backyard. So that's the kind of our theory there and thoughts about entering the Chicken Coop for Classrooms contest. So very excited about that. It'll start on April 2nd, and it'll run until, check the calendar here for April. We'll give that away on Friday, April 27th. How cool is that? Thursday, the 26th at midnight, will probably be the deadline to nominate your local school. So very cool and very excited about that. Also, I talked with some more folks tomorrow. We're trying to get up a little, if you want to call it a board of directors or a membership team, if you will, of folks for the upcoming launch of, I'm very excited about this too, it's just crazy, the National Association of Backyard Chicken Keepers. I'm so excited about this. The National Association of Backyard Chicken Keepers, excited about this. They'll be right now, I'm hoping to shoot for 10 or 12 initial founding members or board of directors or whatever you want to call it. We hope to have about 6 or 7 of the who's who in backyard poultry around the country, and then maybe 5 or 6 just good old backyard chicken keepers that have been keeping chickens for a little while, that are, you know, just the are out there. They're not making a living with backyard poultry. They're just a hobbyist, and we want to have about, you know, 4, 5, or 6 of them that sit on the board to get their feedback as well and have their 2 cents worth with the decision making and where we take it and what kind of options we'll have and benefits. So we're really looking forward to that. Yesterday afternoon, I talked with Derek at mypetchicken.com, and he is on board. We're going to have a brainstorming session probably in the next 2 weeks with the group. I'm still making phone calls, people that I know, people that I trust, that are in the field, and of course we want to get some of those the hobbyist backyard poultry keeper on this as well, looking to have about 12, because there is not a national association, a group of backyard chicken keepers. There's websites, there's forums, there's blogs, there's Facebook pages, there's meetup groups, and I've started about 25 all around the country, local little chicken clubs that have worked out fabulous. But there's no, like, you know, for example, the National Association of Beekeepers, or you know, the National Association of Realtors, the National Association of Home Builders. And so here we'll have the National Association of Backyard Chicken Keepers. Our theory here is to have a quarterly newsletter chock full of great information, including a segment of talking about laws, where we may pick up 2 or 3 places around the country are trying to change their laws about backyard poultry. We'll get the word out, and people can show up and support them. Who knows? Maybe one of the board members can get there and support them as well and educate the council there. We'll have maybe an article or two about educating folks about backyard poultry, about disease or whatnot. We will also, this is one of the big bonuses here for membership, is we're really looking forward to having a membership card. Okay, an official membership card that will grant you a discount at many places around the country, both online stores like First State Vet Supply, Critter-Cages.com, My Pet Chicken, Hobby Hill Farm, and by presenting the card or your membership number that's on the card, you will receive, say it just for example, a 10% discount, maybe at Tractor Supply, maybe at Petco, PetSmart, maybe you'll present your card at Hertz and get a free upgrade on a rental car when you go to rent a car. So that's kind of the idea we're looking at for this National Association of Backyard Chicken Keepers. Very excited about this. And definitely excited. So we're making strides there about what we want to create this to be and what we think that what a lot of people want. So we're just going to try that. We'll have one person on the board that'll be in charge of membership. One will be in charge of the discount card. One will be in charge of the website. One will be in charge of the newsletter, or two or three in charge of the newsletter, because that'll be a big part of it. So that's kind of our goal there, and we really want to have a lot of the who's who on, plus just some, good hobbyist backyard keepers that give us their two cents worth as well. And it'll change over the years, you know. I don't want this association to be tied to the Chicken Whisperer brand, or the My Pet Chicken brand, or the Critter Cages brand, or City Chicks book, or anything like that. I want it to be just a good overall, what's the politically correct word, nonpartisan group or an association all around the country. So that's what we really want to do. Maybe we'll have little brochures where people can join and mail it in, and we'll be sitting those on the counter at the feed and seed stores around the country. Just all these great thoughts we want that we'll be brainstorming here in the next couple of weeks. So that's, I'm very excited about that program that we hope to start up very, very soon. So without further ado, I'm going to head over here to the switchboard. We've got a great show lined up for you today, and I encourage you, if you're new, we love to take your questions. You can give us a call if you have a question during the show about today's topic. The call-in number is 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. Call in, press 1 when instructed to do so, and we'll just try to monitor that if you have a call or question about today's show. If you have a question in the chat room, we used to tell you to post it in all caps, but then sometimes the chat room scrolls so fast we miss it. So just private message me that. Just click on over to the right-hand side of the screen. There's a whole list of everybody participating in the chat room. Just click on the Chicken Whisperer letters there, Chicken Whisperer. Just click on my name, and then it'll come up with a little box with different options, and you can click private, and that'll send me a private message, or a little instant message, if you will, and put your question in there, and I'll make sure I get it on the air today with our guest, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, whom we're bringing on right now. Richard, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, that's fine, Andy. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, great. And folks, I know many of you love the second and fourth Thursday of every month like I do. We were talking about it earlier. If you love the topics and love the information that you get, then again, there's no reason why you shouldn't subscribe to this awesome publication. Backhomemagazine.com is where you can go. Backhomemagazine.com. You can call and subscribe. You can subscribe, I think, online at their website. I'm a subscriber. I know Pat is as well. It's just fabulous. It's so exciting to get that magazine every other month with all the awesome and valuable information. So check them out and think about actually subscribing to Richard's magazine, because it's just tons more of what you hear here on the second and fourth Thursday. So hope you're doing well, Richard, since the last time you were here.
Yeah, we're doing just great. The magazine's doing well, and got a lot of, in these troubling times, we got a lot of interest in the kind of things we do. So I'm, not that I encourage troubled times, but that sort of helps move things along sometimes.
Absolutely. No, absolutely agree with the, you're not a Johnny come lately. I mean, you've, how many years has the magazine been in publication?
It'll be 21 years coming up here in May.
That ought to tell you something, that 21 years of success shows you kind of what a great publication is. If it wasn't a great publication, then we wouldn't be around for 21 years. Like if something, if a car ain't great, then it's not going to be around for very long. So, or any other business for that matter. So that's, congratulations on 21 years. That's absolutely fabulous. We'll have to have a celebration show here coming up in May. So that'll be great. Interesting topic today, planting storm-resistant trees, weather-resistant trees, I guess, if you will, and talking about snow and ice and wind and tornado and hurricane and things like that. I got myself in trouble last time we were talking about biochar, and I just, even from my even from my, you can hear the dogs in the background, someone knocking on the door, I guess, research, I was completely wrong about biochar. So at the beginning of the show, I'm kind of like, well, you would think that that would be, hey, maybe these plants may make it to an ice storm where these others may not and things like that. But tell us about what we can expect for today's show. We'll get started right now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Today we are going to talk about storms and not just tornadoes and hurricanes, but flooding, drought, the effects of weather and things like that. So it is. I guess I should preface everything by saying that we are experiencing. I think as most people realize, we are experiencing a period of weather change, and it's not like the weather's never changed before, but it seems to be changing a lot more quickly. In a shorter number of years, there's greater change, and also more drastically, that there seems to be swings to extremes, seems to be things happening, weather events that are happening out of normal season. Even this year in our area anyway, we have we're having extremely warm early and warm spring. I mean, we pretty much jumped from a rather warm winter to a very early and warm spring. And, you know, we've had temperatures at the 80 degree mark here recently. So it's only March 22nd. Talk a little bit at first about, about the weather. And some of this comes from an article that's coming up in our upcoming issue. The next issue that is at the printer now would be the May-June issue. There's a pretty broad overview article on just the types of trees and the situations you'd be planning for and planting for. In this woman's case, who actually wrote this article, she lives in Massachusetts, and essentially they had a very large storm come through. A tornado, which is very, very rare up in that neck of the woods anyway, in the western Massachusetts area. They had a tornado come through and pretty much devastate the neighborhood and destroy trees that have been there for 120 years or close to that. And so now the author was faced with, what do I plant and how do I plant to avoid, you know, future problems. In other words, you can't stop a tornado from coming through, or you can't stop a high wind, but you can plant a tree that is more resistant to a weather event than the tree that may have been there in the first place, and you can also plant it in a place that it will do the least amount of damage if it happens to break a limb or fall over. So that's essentially the game plan.
Okay.
And so I guess the question would be why, you know, I guess the attitude may be why are we... you know, the tree that grew up, my oak, for example, or my birch or whatever, has been wonderful for 100 years or 250 years, whatever. Why would I want to plant something else? Well, the fact of the matter is weather is changing, and some of those large canopy trees may not be the best choice for a place where at one time they were planted or grew anyway, just for shade. In the old days, before tract houses came into being, before people would, you know, when a builder would build one house at a time, finish it, and move on and build a second house and, you know, do it that way, instead of, you know, somebody buying up, 30 acres and plopping in, 179 homes and squeezing them in the most they can. In the old days, people would actually build in a grove of trees. I mean, or they would obviously cut, if they would have to or possibly need to, cut trees for lumber. You know, things were planned out a little more slowly in those days, and maybe somebody would cut the lumber off the property and actually use it for building the house. But even later on, when you know, Dimension Lumber Store, lumber yard lumber was available in the 20th century, for example, or even in the late 19th century, people would maybe pick a spot and maybe just, you know, pick a spot between some large trees because they needed the shade. And maybe there would have to be some tree cutting or some management going on there, but they would essentially select a spot where you would have that protection from winds and sun. And if it was a deciduous tree, of course, in the winter the leaves would fall off and you'd have the sun in the winter, and then in the summer and late spring, the leaves would come out and shade the house for the hot season. Unfortunately, the tract housing and the sort of rush to build has sort of changed all that. And what people normally do is cut all the trees down, do their building, and then replant new trees. And often enough, these new trees are not really the best species to plant. And you may not have a choice of what is planted when you're buying a home in a place like that. But if you are living in a place where your trees have been destroyed, or where maybe an arborist comes in and says, you know, these need to be cut, or at least trimmed, these limbs need to be cut, you may have a situation where you say, you know, gee, I'd like to replant, and I'd like to replant the right kind of tree for the modern weather situation, which can be anything from, you know, high winds to a lot of, you know, the pattern now seems to be, at least in the eastern part of the country, a lot of flooding and a lot of high moisture, high rainfall, annual rainfall in the summer. In this particular woman's case, I mean, some of these, she's seeing 39, 40 inches of rain in a period between, say, May and September.
Wow.
Which is like, for a lot of people, well, for the western states, that's way more than you would imagine. But for the eastern states, that may be the entire annual rainfall. Mm-hmm. You know, something from 38 to 42 inches is, you know, pretty average for a lot of places on the East Coast. But that occurs for 12 months. And she's talking about it occurring in 5 months. So, and then to make things worse, this is followed by spells of, you know, it's like a horrendous downpour followed by a month of absolute drought. And then another horrendous downpour followed by 2 weeks of drought and that kind of thing. And those patterns are not sustainable or at least not healthy for any kind of planting. So you really have to think about, if this is going to be a weather pattern we're seeing going forward, we may want to think about, you know, selecting the right kind of trees.
Right.
I'm afraid I don't have a lot of information on the western states, because that they are also going through their own, you know, their own weather pattern changes. But I think just in the speaking of what we're going to be talking about today, people will get the idea of some of the websites to go to and possibly some of the sources where they can look in their own state and regional areas to find the best applications for their own, you know, their own situation. NOAA is a good reference here. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, the website there, the NOAA.gov, will allow people to get on there and sort of see. They have a lot of information on the website, a lot of regional and specific information on not just historically what's happened in storms, but what the future may look like, and some mitigation situation. Of course, there's always a lot of information on how to deal with things, whatever. But that particular website, it's our taxpayers' funding being put to a good use, and it describes the tornado activity in 2011. That's just last year. The cycle for last year was the fourth deadliest year in American history. Of course, meaning since they've been keeping records. Also we got to remember that deadliest, not just deadliest, but also damaging, when they also keep fiscal, you know, financial amounts and record things by that. Obviously, as more and more people build houses in areas that possibly shouldn't have, never did have houses built on them, that means coastal regions, some of the backwaters, the inland waterway areas, some of the marshes and salt backwater bracken areas, places that really were meant to be areas that recharged our freshwater supplies, are being built on now. And when you start building in high-risk areas like that, naturally what happens when a storm comes in, it damages, you know, in 1955, there may not have been that much damage. The same intensity of a storm in 1955 is going to create a lot more damage in 2005 than it would have in 1955, because there's that much more building going on, that many more homes, that much more infrastructure and all that. So that just puts a little insight into the idea of personal damage and property damage. But nonetheless, the storms are also getting more severe, and they're happening at times when they normally didn't happen. So you have to be aware of that.
It'd be interesting to know, too, less population, so less money damage because less homes, less buildings, less people, maybe less deaths because of less people in areas versus now we're putting all this multi-purpose use housing and things like that in these places where we have tons of people on 1 acre or what have you. It would be interesting to see between, like you mentioned, the 50s, 1950s to 2010, the quality of construction of the buildings based, you know, are more buildings surviving because of the quality of construction or because of the research that folks are doing out, you know, the storm chasers and the meteorologists and studying the storms and the type of winds. Based on the construction today, that would be neat too to see if a house in the 50s was hit by an EF3, might not have survived. Well, today they might. That would be interesting information too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The building codes, and from my building code experience, the building codes have been drastically rewritten or modified, and that is one of the parameters is the mile per hour wind, and that's based on not only location but also the terrain around, and you know, mountain. Like in my state here, there's three different, basically a Piedmont area, there's a mountainous area, and there's a coastal plain area, and the building codes are very specific about the kind of winds and how to build. For example, like roof ties, the metal strapping that never was put on a house in the 50s. I mean, there really wasn't. They may have put in extra nails. They may have used a different style of construction or whatever, which may have achieved the same thing. But now it is required that in certain counties or in certain high wind areas that are described pretty carefully in the zoning and building code maps and area descriptions. You do have to use strapping and certain ties and certain kinds of fasteners that are approved by the Department of Insurance, which is who runs our building code, laws here. And the number of homes going up in these areas, and like you said, the density of homes, which actually is not a bad thing. I mean, pictures or many scenarios, high density is really sort of a good thing because it keeps people all in one place, and we don't have to stretch our infrastructure out to to serve all these people. Because there's a lot of people, maybe a lot of people in one building or a lot of people in one unit, for example, if you have multi-family homes, you can do a lot of personal injury to a lot more people for the same square footage. So they really have to be careful about, and they are very careful about specifying how the homes are built, and they are well prepared to cover that kind of thing. So that is an interesting thing, and I think a good statistical analysis would show that the extra effort going towards building correctly has really paid off, because you probably don't have as many roofs flying off in the same F category storm as you would have, you know, in 1955 or whatever, may have been years ago. The one thing I did want to mention is that the weather patterns and the type of weather that people may be sustaining going forward just dictates two different things. I said the proper selection of plants and trees and the proper placement of plants and trees. And I will reference one thing. It's a really good book. It's expensive, but it's called, I don't actually have the price of it. In fact, I don't even have the year it was published, but just an Amazon search or a Google search will pull up, all that information. But it's Deers, Hardy Trees and Shrubs. It's an illustrated encyclopedia with about 1,600, if not more, color illustrated plates that show all the tree shapes, all the, the leaf.
Can you spell that book, the name?
Yeah, it's D-I-R-R apostrophe S. Deer is an animal, but D-I-R-R apostrophe S.
Okay.
Hardy Trees and Shrubs. and it's called, and then the subtitle is an illustrated encyclopedia, and you can Google it right now, Andy, probably, and look it up, you're breaking up a little bit. You have to repeat that.
I'm gonna post a link on it. I'm gonna go and see if I can find it, and then post a link in the chat room for everybody. Sure.
Sure. Sure. That's it. It's a multi-zone book. It covers zones 3 through 6, and then there's some in zone 7 and 8. So it's a pretty broad swath of books. It's published by Timberland Press, at least the edition that I'm aware of. Sometimes publishers sell rights, and maybe somebody else will pick the rights up. But this particular one is and may have been forever a Timberland Press book, so that'll help to identify it. And that gives a lot of information on, it's a complete listing of hardy trees, the attributes of what trees to pick for, you know, such as drought tolerance, wind resistance, other, you know, limb strength, and other kinds of things that are really critical to, you know, to what you need to be looking for when you're choosing your best storm resistant species. And the other thing is the state university systems, the land grant colleges, usually that's the schools that were initially set up to provide for our agriculture and in some cases our mining and our farming and mining and agriculture, those particular areas of education that help grow the states in the old days and, you know, of course still do. You know, these are the state universities, and every state, to my knowledge, every state has one, at least one. Some of them have two or three. Those are going to be, no matter what state you're in, they're going to be good resources for the same kind of information. Part of their job is to do research in and make available the information about the best choices to make for. Dealing with planting trees and choosing species and that kind of thing, and as an extension of that, because they're all tied together, your extension service, your university cooperative extension service, which unfortunately in many areas has been pared a little bit as we become fewer and fewer agriculturally aimed counties. Sometimes, at least in our state, they've been sort of several counties may be sharing the same office instead of, it used to be one county had one representative or one office in every county, and you just have to drive to the county seat and usually is where it was and get your information. Now there may be two or three counties are served by one area, but no matter what, there's going to be somewhere some information nearby, and that's another good source. So, you know, just go Google your cooperative extension service in your area, and you can find out what it is, and they have free publications. Usually, the agent will be able to availability will be able to help you with some of this stuff. And there's usually a lot of information available nowadays on the website that will help with it. And every state, as I said, every state has some form of some form of information on it. So put your tax dollars to work. Go take advantage of it. Take
Absolutely.
Advantage of it. In our area, they've been really helpful for us as a magazine and for me as an individual, and I know a lot of other people as individuals. They, they're there. They're really there mainly to help the grower, the professional growers and whatever, but they can't refuse to help an individual. I mean, they will within, a reasonable time frame or time availability, they will help just regular old people just like they'll help the farmers. In many cases, it's the same information. I mean, basically, you may only have 4 apple trees, and your farmer neighbor has 400. But it's still basically the same information.
Sure.
So these are all the basic resources that I would starting from that Deere's book, all the way down to the university information, and then the extension service. These would be the places to look. You can get it for free, and then you can go all the way up to buying. There's a lot of different books out there, but that Deere's book is probably one of the best out there, and it it's just full of good information.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what I was trying to get the best the best information. Oh yeah, there's another website. That's another thing. It's also a good website, treecaretips.org. It's just all strung together, treecaretips.org.
Got it.
And there's several different pages. The planting /planning section is where you're going to find the, you know, the information on location and species and that kind of thing. So just a little a little walking through that treecaretips.org site is going to be very beneficial to people to get information on, you know, what they may need to know. Like in location, for example, just in locating your tree, you really don't want to put it too close to your house or your outbuildings, unless you don't care about them. I mean, if you don't care whether the tree falls in your old 60-year-old outbuilding, that's one thing. But you know, basically your house you want to protect. So it's all very dependent on height. If the tree height is greater than 60 feet, or if it's going to achieve in its growth cycle a tree height of 60 feet or greater, then it's going to need to be 20 feet or greater from the building. If your tree height is somewhere between 30 and 60 feet, then you can move it a little closer, you know, 15 feet or more away from the building. If it's a small tree, a species that really doesn't grow anything more than say 30 feet, 25 or 30, you're then safe to be as close as 10 feet to the home. But the height of the tree will dictate the distance from the house, and in many cases, this will upset the old, you know, the old image of the shade tree being close to the house and all that kind of thing. But you know, it's the wave of the future, folks. I mean, the species will help with that to some extent. But some of those broad canopy old maple trees, for example, they really can't be all that close to the house, just because those limbs do get old. They do break. They do have a heavy, you know, the deer book and the but the guy's name is, the author's name, by the way, is Michael A. Deere, D-I-R-R. And that book, and also the website I just mentioned, the Tree Care Tips website, will explain that the canopy of the tree also affects the effect of an ice storm, for example. The broader it is, the more leaves it has, the more little limbs it has, the more susceptible it's going to be to having to support all that ice. And when you have to support, when you got that much canopy to support all that ice, it makes it more difficult for the tree to stand up to the ice storm. So,
and let us not forget that if you have the tree close to your house, overhanging limbs, that you just may have squirrels in your attic too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a real good point. Ridge vents, you know, people, it's really not off topic, but people, a lot of the homes that were built in the later, you know, 20 years or more, or newer, or 30 years or newer, they use ridge cap vents as opposed to the old end gable vents. And it's ridge vents are actually more efficient. But you have to remember that those, if they're cheaper, there's screens in there that prevent insects and whatever from coming in. But some of the cheap designs and some of the really economy designs they're actually very poorly made, and they can be, a squirrel can actually, not that the space is designed to not let the squirrels in, but you know, any kind of damage at all, or sometimes a small squirrel can push and get right through. If you've got gable, the old-fashioned gable end vents that have widely spaced louvers in them, and you have a screen on the other side, that screen gets moisture in it. Over the years, it gets rusted. Even the galvanized ones get rusted, and it doesn't take much for a squirrel or a snake to push its way, you know, a little bit of pressure on there, and after 20 years, that thing's probably not that strong anyway. And if they can come through the louvers, they can get through into the screen and push that through. So yeah, you really don't want to encourage squirrels on the roof of the house if you can. So that may mean some judicious pruning or even removal of, like in my case, two majestic hemlock trees that were planted way, way too close to the house, and now I've got damaged shingles. I've got squirrels jumping all over the place, and they will have to come out. I haven't had any roof, you know, any major damage, but I can see where maybe from a height on an ice storm, you know, you get a fully loaded limb that might be, you know, 40 pounds without ice on it. Now you've got 100 pounds come crashing down on a you know, 40-year-old roof, and it may do some damage. I mean, may poke a hole through the shingles, right. Or may rub the shingle up, and the shingles are really there only to prevent the a shield for the. The real waterproofing is the felt layer underneath the shingles, and if you scrape those shingles off, you really don't have much left to protect. You know, water can get through that anything abrasive get through that felt, and you got immediate leak. So, you know, think about that. Don't put it off. The other thing is, I think I mentioned it, the juncture points between the limb connection to the trunk is, some species are very tolerant of that, have a very strong juncture point, and some do not. So when the ice storms come or when heavy winds come, you know, that juncture point is put at risk, and those limbs will come down. The other thing I found of interest that people don't always think about, when I worked in an architectural office some years ago, you know, it occurred to me, a lot of people didn't realize it, urban and suburban areas are a completely different animal than the woods. I would work in town, and I would come home, and it would be, I would feel to me like it would be 10 degrees cooler. I don't know if it was actually 10 degrees cooler, but it was pretty close. When there's a lot of trees, the air, just the, you know, you have protection, you have a canopy of trees, you have just cooler air than you do in the city, where you basically have a lot fewer trees, and in the suburbs where you have trees spaced further apart. But it's not just the temperature change and all that heat bouncing off the black asphalt and coming oozing off the streets and making everything hotter. It's also the wind. When you have a forest, a broad swath of forest will help slow those winds down, and all those trees will be able to absorb in en masse, if you will, the brunt of the wind, and it'll sort of slow it down, and it will not damage the trees. I mean, at least not drastically. But when you're talking about an urban landscape or a suburban landscape where you have basically a lot of flat, wide open space, and all of a sudden you have a few trees, or maybe just a lot of trees have been cut and there's a few standing specimens or majestic oaks or maples, whatever, those, and pines especially, those are left, you know, as a sort of sentries that may not be able to stand up to those winds. You know, you've taken an environment where there are just a whole swath of trees, and then you remove 60% of them, if not more, and now you're asking what's left to take the brunt of the wind. Well, folks, it doesn't work that way. They usually can't, and that's where you'll see the trees top. A lot of times, pine trees just snapped off the top. Ice storms, a combination of ice and wind, maple trees give way. So in an urban and suburban environment, it's very, very important to select trees that are built or grown to help deal with those higher winds and those ice storms, because they're not going to be able to deal with it as easily in the urban and suburban planting modes as they are when they were in the forests, where they were intended to be in the first place. So that's a real important part. And you know, a lot of this stuff, I'm not going to say I'm sorry to say, but just from a financial standpoint, it's more expensive. It may be the point time to call in a professional arborist to actually give an estimate or have a look at it. And even if you're not going to have that person do the work, at least maybe give an opinion and then give instructions for how the work should be done, because plenty of them will work with you as a homeowner to, you know, just lay out a game plan, and then you can either hire out or do the work yourself. That's pretty common. So, you know, that's not a bad idea, especially if you're thinking of, you're talking about a home insurance and all that kind of thing. Some insurance companies will actually help pay, either will pay or will help pay to have the trees removed away from the house altogether, because they don't want to risk the liability or the cost on their backs of having to fix the damage after it's done. So they'll come in and say, this tree's, you know, you may say that she's too close. I think the tree may be too close to the house. Guy will come in and say, yes, it is. You know, we'll cut it down at our cost, insurance. You know, you've been a good homeowner, and here we are, away it goes. And that's, you know, not every company is in that mode, but I have been surprised by, you know, how that, in my case, they've done it. And things like the chimney sweep, you know, the chimney sweep comes in and says, You've got some potentially damaged flue tile, and I would suggest lining the chimney with a stainless steel liner. Well, some insurance companies will actually, if you're heating with wood primarily, they'll put it in for you. They'll charge you, because it's a lot cheaper for them to spend the $1,800 on a liner than it is for them to spend the $118,000 on a new addition to your house, you know, after the fire. So, you know, people are sometimes leery about this, but it doesn't hurt to ask. Usually, you know, doing it is one thing, but asking, I'm thinking about this, they may not just cancel you just for asking. I mean, it's, you know, you can ask your agent, your local agent first before you, you know, actually make the move. So you get some insight into it that way. But, the idea of bringing an arborist is not really a bad idea. You know, it's just helping to get diseases, weak trees, trees that may be unhealthy, that kind of thing. Just get them on the list to at least make a decision as to whether what to do about them and when to do it about them. But I think I might, unless there's any questions immediately, I can just go on to maybe talk about some of the wind and ice resistant trees you might think about to replace your maples and your oaks and all that with at least in the eastern part of the state, unless you want to take your break now. I mean, it's up to you.
I've got a couple of questions actually that have been sent over to me that may be related, and let me see here. Where's the first one? From New Dawn Farm Girl here in the chat room. How well do fruit trees hold up in storms? We're planting some apples, peach, and pears here at the homestead.
I don't think they have their own specific set of circumstantial problems, and you know, basically ice and frost. I mean, but I don't think the chat room caller is asking about that as much as just the actual strength and whatever. Yeah, and yes, they will because of the burden of the fruit on them. And because they are generally a wider, canopy kind of tree, they probably are more susceptible to, especially an ice load, than your average tree. And again, there will be some protection in the grove as opposed to just an individual tree. Like at home, just a homeowner may plant a couple of trees or half a dozen trees here and there around the yard just to have some fruit, but a grove owner or an orchard owner will have the protection of much more trees in rows, which is going to help defray the damage from wind, for example. So that's a great question for your local extension agent. We here in my county is one of the largest apple producing counties in the state, income and volume, and we, we have, there's a lot of information on apples for us, and that's where I go, the extension.
Okay. Perfect. One more here. I have a question regarding a flowering tree called Royal, I'm going to probably destroy it here, Royal Paulownia?
Paulownia.
There you go. See, I do want to destroy it. Not sure I got that spelled right, by the way, she said. They're beautiful, very fast growing, but are they sturdy and not brittle?
That is a good question. We did two articles. We did one very extensive article on Paulownias back in the early 2000s, or 2000 maybe, or 2001. And then we did another article at some point. I don't remember what it was, but I don't remember particularly what it had to say about that. I do know it was encouraging the use of them because they do grow fast and they do have some other benefits. Now one of the benefits that maybe not that they don't have is being a native species. You have to be, if you care about that, you have to be careful about that. But other than that particular fact, I'll do after the show is I'll probably go and look up in our index and see if I can find anything on that. It's not going to help us now, but Paulownia is that particular tree has been chosen as a good fast grower for a lot of reasons. I think they've been chosen as windrow trees and some other other beneficial applications like that, but I'm not positive as to how resistant they may be. Other than being fast growing. So that's I'm going to have to sort of half answer that question.
Sure, that's fine. East Dallas Dave in the chat room has a good point here too. He's heard of several homeowners associations that actually restrict what kinds of trees can and where they can be planted. So that's something to think about is if you live in a homeowners association, before you do anything, paint your house, mow your grass, plant anything, check with them to see what trees may or may not be approved. So that's a really good point, Dave, and thanks for sharing that. Yeah, we can take a break. It's exactly top of the hour, 1 o'clock here. Folks, if you're just tuning in, thank you for joining us. You can always listen to the archive and catch up. We are talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher and chief technical writer at Back Home Magazine. You too can subscribe and get all this great information every other month with their publication, backhomemagazine.com. Stay with us. We'll return right after this short break from our sponsors. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg's should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try ManaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try ManaPro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All right. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. You can visit them online, backhomemagazine.com. You can also subscribe to the magazine there. And today's topic, we're talking about planting storm-resistant trees, and that would include tornadoes, strong winds, hurricanes, floods, ice storms, snowstorms, really the whole nine yards. And I've got a question here, maybe you can answer, Richard, that came over here to us. We have apple trees in our orchard and a cedar tree windbreak on the north edge of our property. well over 100 yards apart, but we are having a problem with cedar blight on our apple trees. Any ideas?
Well, that's a little out of my element, I think.
Okay.
The thing what I would do is, again, I would talk to the extension agent because they, you know, they do have access to a lot of information, you know, a lot of local information that a larger entity may not have. Even a good book may not have. You know, it's pretty specific. Could be a specifically mm-hmm. local problem, so or you know, regional or whatever. So that's what I do.
Perfect. Very good. All righty. Well, we'll continue. Any other information you can share?
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about the Tree Care Tips website,
right.
And on there, there's it discusses this at length, and I just want to review that briefly. There are three reasons to prune a tree. You know, we want to keep them pruned before they get damaged. I mean, pruning can actually help resolve some of the potential damage problems, and then once a tree is planted, of course, if you maintain its pruning, it's going to be a healthier tree. But why do we want to bother? Well, the main reason, really, from an arborist point of view, and from you know homeowner's point of view, is to maintain its natural shape and beauty. You really don't want to trim or prune a tree outside of its normal, you know, parameters, particularly because it was meant to grow in a certain way, and you know we want to encourage that kind of growth, not force it to do something that
mm-hmm.
it wasn't intended to do. So you've got to, you know, every tree has its own sort of shape, and you want to maintain that. And you know, that also comes along with the beauty of it, the way it looks. And the other reason to prune is to keep up with pruning is to maintain the health of the tree. You want to keep it free from diseases and pests. And and you know, pruning will give you a chance, you know, if you're inspecting the tree for pruning, you're also inspecting it for things like insect damage, any other mm-hmm. disease damage and whatever. Do you recommend,
because I've heard both sides of the story here, when you prune, to put any type of, I don't know, it's either a tar or a syrup or a coating or a first aid ointment or whatever, on that you trim to prevent from disease from getting in there?
Yeah, I do only because I think I'm just old-fashioned about it. I mean, I've always been told, and we have always done that. In my, you know, I put a white latex paint on it. Sometimes I have just put on just like whatever I've had, using up you know whatever old paint that's lumpy or whatever. Some people put a tar, like a roofing tar, on it or whatever. However, last fall I had stumbled upon something, and I'm sure it's not hard to find, but there were some pretty good reasons why not to do that, and I don't recall exactly what they were, but maybe it was just that it wasn't worth the time and trouble to do it, but
right.
I didn't remember particularly saying there was anything really drastically wrong with it, but that would be just a good Google research topic, I think, for somebody. You know, I just do it because I think it helps. It just helps keep the bugs out, and that's mainly the, you know, the main reason, from my understanding, anyway. And as most people realize, the best time to do the pruning definitely is not in the late spring or summer. That's the most stressful and the most risky time to do any of the pruning. That should all be done in you know the late winter is a good time to do it, or in you know maybe in the fall. Too, but the late winter is actually a good time before the sap comes up, and you know you can sort of see things, see before the leaves come out and all that. You can get a good look at what's going on. So you know that's important, and I'm sure different areas have different you know different time frames. But you know that's a good reminder to people not to be thinking about pruning in the you know in May or in the middle of the summer. Let me see. We were talking about healthy and disease-free, and then the last reason to prune trees is just the safety of it. Think about, you know, removing the overhanging branches, looking at where the limbs actually meet the trunk. Anything is structurally unsound. If ice has cracked a limb or damaged a limb, it's not going to grow correctly after that. Of course, professional opinion may be necessary in some of the larger, you know, if there's some ancient old live oak tree or something that somebody wants to save or whatever, you know, it may be necessary to call in somebody who really knows what they're doing to have a look at it. But when there's a safety or health problem, the best thing to do is get the pruning done sooner than later, because that is not going to get any better down the road. It's going to get worse. So take care of it. If it has to be cut, and you dread cutting, if it has to be cut, then just bite the bullet and do it. That's essentially the way things go. It may only be a limb prune, but it may be the entire tree. But that's if there is that kind of damage, it really does have to be dealt with.
Okay. Go ahead. A question here from Cheap Peeps Poultry. Again, since you're not an arborist or tree specialist, you share your knowledge that you have, and that's fabulous. So some of these questions, like you had mentioned, out of your realm, just like I don't answer questions on our Facebook page that because I'm not a certified avian vet about medical issues or breaking and resetting legs on chickens. But any suggestions for Zone 10A trees to give us privacy and that are strong enough to withstand strong thunderstorms? Our extension office is no help, unfortunately. We do have eucalyptus now, and we love that they grow quickly, but the branches are just not strong. So I'll tell you right now, I'll be honest, I can look real quick. I'm not sure where zone 10A is, but they're looking for privacy and something strong enough to withstand some thunderstorms.
Yeah, that's on the very periphery. Actually, the zone, we're talking about 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Atlanta.
And three to 7.
Yeah.
Where's your zone?
We're set around 7, zone 7, I believe, down in Atlanta, south of Atlanta, 7.
Yeah, because even the references, I'm looking real quick through the references, we only go up here to, let me see, to 8, some of 8.
Okay, she's saying
way beyond the... Yeah,
Southwest Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say it has to be down the tip of Florida somewhere, maybe possibly at the tip of Texas, somewhere down that Big Bend or below that. But anyway, I think maybe I can just talk about some wind-resistant trees that are generally eastern trees, and then she can maybe take some of these names to somebody who knows more about it and then see how they do.
Right.
So we're looking at things like, and some of these are hybrids, but I mean that maybe has to be what happens. I mean, we're looking at things like the hackberry tree. These are all good wind-resistant trees. Some of them are more specific to the Northeast, but others are okay for the East Coast. As you get down further south, I think we maybe getting a little bit out of our realm. But again, I'm not a silviculturist, so I really don't I'm not sure about all this. But I didn't get these names out there. People can at least have something to grasp and go off on their own with. The common hackberry, it's about a 60-foot tree at the upper end, 40 to 60 feet. That's a good choice. A hybrid elm, any of the elm hybrids, the particular name, Frontier, Regal, and Homestead, that's a 50-foot tree. That would be a good, good choice. An elm tree is always a good, always a good. You don't usually hear about them as much. We get our oaks and our maples and our and some of our some of those other trees people like to the birch trees and such. But we have tulip poplars all over the place here where I live. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good tree. But I probably wouldn't plant if I was planting a tree, it probably wouldn't be a tulip poplar. It'd be, probably pick something a little rarer and something we want to encourage growing, possibly from something that had been damaged by an earlier blight, and there have been new strains of the tree developed to help set that off, and now we're trying to reintroduce the species. But, so the hybrid elm is one of them. That's a good, the elm disease has caused some damage, so we can reintroduce another form of elm. That's a good thing. Again, the names there, the Latin name is Ulmus, but the hybrid names are Frontier, Homestead, and Regal. Rain tree, that's one you don't hear much about. The golden rain tree, that's a little bit of a shorter tree. That's only, say, a 30 or 40 foot tree, but that's that's another type of a option there for replanting. The Amur maple, Now, I'm not real familiar with that. I mean, it is obviously a maple tree, but it's a short. It's a dwarf probably. It's a 20-foot tree. That sounds like it's going to provide quite a bit of shade, but not at the elegant 60-foot height, perhaps. And I'm assuming it's just a smaller canopy, so it's a smaller height, smaller canopy, so less potential damage if things do happen. The ginkgo tree. We've all heard of the ginkgo biloba.
Mm-hmm.
You know that stuff. Well, that's where it comes from. The ginkgo tree. It's a 50-foot and up tree. That's a big tall tree. So that would be a good choice for for people who want a taller specimen. Obviously, get it away from the house, but it's a taller specimen. Honey locust is another one. That's another locust, honey locust variety. That's another tall tree. The other one is a species of oak, which is specific to pin oak. That's another, not a red oak or a white oak, but a pin oak. That is another 50, 60-foot tree, if not greater. So that's a good choice. The bald cypress, that's another one. That's another tall tree. So, and there's also the Japanese zelkova, and I have to admit, I do not know what that is. That's obviously not a native species, but it's all these trees, the last ones I mentioned, the honey locust, the ginkgo, the pin oak, the bald cypress, and the Japanese zelkova are all very tall trees, so they may be something that people want to look up. If anybody needs, I do have Latin names here for them as well, not that my pronunciation is any good, but if people do need to know that, I can offer that too.
Great.
At this point, I'll just, the ginkgo is just called the ginkgo biloba, the pin oak is the Quercus palustris, and the zelkova also has it's called zelkova in the Latin name with the serrata name in it, and then there's the Taxodium distichum, I guess would be for the bald cypress. So, and these are all names that would come. If you look up the common name, it's all going to be, any good reference will have the Latin name with it. So, but it's always good to double check because so many regions, so many even local localities have different common names for the same tree that may be called something completely different mm-hmm. elsewhere commonly, but they'll all have the same Latin name. So that's important. And some, to make it even more confusing, sometimes the common name will refer to a completely different species in a Latin name. So it's that's why they actually want to always reference the Latin name as well. That's probably about all I have, unless there's any specific mm-hmm. questions. Maybe at some point we ought to look for and publish an article on Western trees.
Mm-hmm.
I always joke among my friends who have moved out west and love it out there and are never coming back that, you guys don't have any trees anyway, so what difference does it matter? And I except for the people in the Pacific Northwest and the coastal California or whatever, but I mean in the broad expanses of the West, as you go out, through Iowa and Kansas, and you just go out, it's just a whole different territory. Of course, Colorado's a little different, but it's a whole different territory, and our trees are just a different kind of tree, different kind of climate, different rain patterns. So we're just a different animal.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Awesome information. Very helpful. I'm sure a lot of notes were taken. And as always, fabulous and awesome information. Where else are you going to get this information? Two places: here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, and, of course, the magazine itself, Back Home Magazine. You can subscribe, backhomemagazine.com. You can call or order your subscription there on online. So very cool. Richard, thank you very much for joining us. We'll look forward to seeing you here. Let me pull up your email here. Well, in a couple of weeks, you'll be back, and the topic looks like it will be, pronounce that for me, phenology for gardens?
Yeah, phenology for gardens. That's sort of the watching the weather signs, the old wives' tales, the signs, the patterns, the you know, that kind of thing, which,
yeah.
as it turns out, is not so wacky at all. I mean, it'll be a pretty interesting show, if I have to say so myself. I've had a lot of good feedback on that.
That'll be awesome. Now, would this be included in that? Because my grandma would always say, and I've heard others say this, that, well, if the cows are laying down, you're probably going to get some rain.
those kind of expressions, and just planning by the moon. I mean, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll hit as much of that as we can, and I'll try to remember to take some extra, bring in some extra information. You know, from other sources. We have done a number of articles on this topic over the years, and I'll be sure to gather all that stuff around me so I can actually reference it when I'm on the air here.
That'll be fabulous. We'll definitely be looking forward to that, and we appreciate you coming back. Until then, you stay safe, and have a great one.
Okay, we'll see you next month then.
Great, thank you. All righty, that was Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Visit them online, backhomemagazine.com. And, man, you got to subscribe to that publication. It is absolutely, absolutely awesome information. If you love his show here, you're going to love his magazine. Let me do something here and getting ready for the trivia contest. Alrighty. Hey, tomorrow is Fun Friday. We'll be giving away tons and tons of prizes, and so we're definitely looking forward to that. You can give us a call in, and there we go. Okay, perfect. That's what I needed. Perfect. Got my trivia question for today. Trivia question for today. That is time. It's trivia time. Every day we give a prize away here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Get back over here to the chat room and the switchboard so I can do that. We got a great prize for everybody today. It's awesome. It is a brooder kit from critter-cages.com. A complete brooder kit from critter-cages.com, and that includes the corral and a water and a feeder and a lamp and a bulb, and it's awesome. Everything you need to brood those new baby chicks you're going to be getting this spring. I know you are. Don't try to hide it. You have a chicken addiction, and we contribute to that every day here at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We know who you are. You have a chicken addiction, so you know you're going to get some baby chicks this spring, and this will be a great brooder to have to get those going. $43 value plus shipping to your front door anywhere in the lower 48 states. Alrighty, so let me get over here. We will take, I'll tell you what caller we're going to take here in a minute, and then, of course, we'll clear the switchboard to make it fair for everybody. Okay? Richard Frudenberger, publisher of course, Back Home Magazine. BackHomeMagazine.com is where you can subscribe, and you can give them a call as well, and talk to a real live human being there in North Carolina, right at his headquarters. You won't be transferred to India to order his magazine. So today's trivia question is, how much is a one-year subscription to Back Home Magazine? How much is a one-year subscription to Back Home Magazine? Caller number seven, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. We'll get that. If you, caller number seven, you answer correctly, and you've won that awesome brooder kit from critter-cages.com, valued at $43. Yep, $43, plus shipping to your location. It's probably well over a $50 value after shipping. And from our good friends, one more time, critter-cages.com. The question is, we'll take caller number seven, 347-637-3237. How much is a one-year subscription to Back Home Magazine? You can subscribe at backhomemagazine.com. 347-637-3237. Give us a call right now. 347-637-3237. Caller number seven. How much is a one-year subscription? Tomorrow is Fun Friday. We've got a lot of prizes that we're going to be giving away. We'll start here tomorrow as well, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And then it'll be another great weekend. And then guess what? Coming up Monday, you guessed it, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Absolutely. Another great episode. We'll continue our talk. I believe we're talking about E. coli. We'll continue that talk this coming Monday. And, of course, Peter will be taking your phone calls about chicken health issues. I do not pretend to be a chicken vet. I do not pretend to be an avian vet or anybody's vet, for that matter. And so I will answer some questions on our Facebook page that I have experience with. It would just be my opinion at that point or what may have helped in that situation if we had seen it. But I'm not going to spout off all kinds of medical advice because I'm not qualified and will not do that at the risk of hurting or your flock, which we know you love. And I'm not just going to get on Google and research it and then type it and answer your question and then use the and then post the information as if it was mine, even though I just went over to Google and looked it up and just copy and pasted it. So not going to do that. Nope, I've got a reputation to uphold of good factual information on our site. We want to continue that. So that is not something that we're going to do, is pretend what we're not and then a Google an answer and then type it as it's my own. We just don't do that here at Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So caller number 7-347-637-3237. We're going to go to the phone lines. Let's see. Right now, we said caller number 7. Caller number 7, you're on the air with Andy the Chicken Whisperer, calling in from area code 248-248. You're live on the air. State your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
Hello?
Hey, you're live on the air. Tell us your name and what state you're calling from.
Hi, I'm from Michigan. My name is Dawn.
Dawn from Michigan. You didn't get hit by any of those storms, did you?
Yeah, a couple.
Uh-oh.
A couple EF2s.
Oh, goodness. That's never fun. I was thinking about you guys. I'm an avid Doppler radar watcher. I'm not a storm fan whatsoever. I guess a little situation back when I was about 4 or 5 years old kind of scarred me for life with storms, so I am not a storm fan. So I'm a Doppler geek now. I try to watch and see what's going on around the country, especially if anything's heading our way, so just to make sure we need to bunker down. So I'm sorry to hear that. So tell us, you were the correct caller number 7, and our question was to win the critter-cages.com brooder kit. What is a 1-year subscription to Back Home Magazine? What will it cost you today?
$21.97.
That is exactly right. $21.97 and well worth every single penny. Congratulations up there in Michigan. You are the winner of that brooder kit. And let me tell you, you got to send me an email if you want to claim that prize so I can get it shipped to you. It ships out of California. It'll take a little bit of time to get there, but just send me that information via email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.com. Put brooder winner in the subject line, if you would, and then within the email itself, I'll need your name, shipping address, phone number, and type your email address again so I can just copy and paste that and get it over to carl@critter-cages.com. And like I said, it ships out of California, so it may take, you know, I would allow up to 30 days for it to get to your location from critter-cages.com. Maybe shorter, maybe about 2 weeks, but don't be surprised if it takes a little longer depending on their order history right now. So we appreciate you listening. Congratulations up there in Michigan. And that's going to wrap up another show here, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We hope you'll tune in tomorrow. It'll be fun Friday. We've got a lot of prizes to give away. We'll have some fun trivia. And again, it's 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. We hope you have a great and blessed day, and we'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Oh.